Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Local Voter Education Program Special, a two-hour program with our first guest, the front-runner for Tarrant County Judge, Tim O'Hare, for the first hour. And our guest for the second hour, Aaron Sorrells, running for Lieutenant Governor. Election Day is March 1st. And now a reminder that the 12th largest city in the country, where the Fort Worth mayor and council voted 9-0 to remove the First Amendment from the city council agenda, the public right to speak at the city council meeting, is gone. We are looking for real Americans that are willing to fight to take back what that bubblehead bleach blonde of a mayor took from us. We hope you will take a stand and call the mayor 817-392-1234 and demand that our right to speak to be placed back on the city council agenda. And with that, here is your host, James H. McBride.
How are we doing tonight, folks? Welcome to a special edition of the Local Voter Education Podcast, done here on blogtalkradio.com. In addition, you can find other important information about the city of Fort Worth politics in Tarrant County at fwdistrict5.com. My name is James A. McBride. I am your host for this evening. I think we're going to have a special night for you. In the first hour, we're going to have on Tim O'Hare, who is a candidate for a Tarrant County judge on the Republican ticket. And then in our normal time slot from 8 to 9 p.m., we're going to have on Aaron Sorrells, who is also a Republican and is running for lieutenant governor in the state of Texas. Bob, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm doing just fine tonight, James. Just fine. I'll let you take it from there. Right. We got a lot to talk about tonight. Go ahead.
Yeah, we sure do. Do we have Tim on the line right now?
I believe this might be Tim at 1431. We do have another caller at 1431. Let me turn this one on and see if this is about Tim. Tim, is that you at 1431?
That's me.
All right, Tim. I'll let you have it there. All right. James.
Sure. How are you doing this evening, Tim?
I'm good. How are you guys tonight?
I'm doing well. A couple things starting off here. First thing is I just want to apologize to you and the guests that have tuned in to listen to you a couple of weeks ago. We had our technical difficulties. I think you know through your time in doing media that nothing is ever going to go right when it needs to go right. So I want to apologize to you for that.
You know what? No apology necessary. Just if you'll double my pay for what we're getting paid to be on the show, we'll be good.
Okay, well, Bitcoin
the mail. Just don't cash it till next decade, okay?
Okay, all right. We'll hold the check for a few days.
All right, well, Tim, starting out, this is your third time on our podcast. I know a lot of the people that tune in know who you are, but if there's somebody that's new that's tuning in, would you just like to introduce yourself to them and let them know who you are?
Sure. So I'm Tim O'Hare. I'm a candidate, a Republican candidate, and then the conservative candidate for Tarrant County Judge. I'm happily married to my wife, Kristen, and we have four beautiful children. We live in Southlake, and they might know me or know of previous stops I've had. I was born and raised in Farmers Branch, where I was a mayor and city councilman there. I have been the Tarrant County Republican Party chairman, ran for that when I moved over to Tarrant County. Gosh, it's been about 10 years ago, right around there, something like that. And then most recently, I started a political action committee called Southlake Families PAC when the Southlake Carroll ISD attempted to put some critical race theory Marxist ideology in our schools. And I led the effort to stop that, and we did stop it. We won that battle, and in a 16-month time frame, we overturned the school board and took it back from more liberal-minded, bureaucrat-minded folks and put it in the hands of parents that are not going to let that critical race theory nonsense be taught in our schools.
Tim, since the last time we talked, you've been able to get a couple of high endorsements, one of those being from Ted Cruz, who's a senator here in the state of Texas, and the other one was the 45th president of the United States, Donald John Trump. My question I want to lead off to you here is, what kind of process did you have to go through to get an endorsement from Trump?
So with President Trump, there are a lot of people in Tarrant County with connections to the president or the president's staff. As most of you know, he still is extremely active in politics and extremely involved in shaping the course of our nation's political climate. And so we had a number of people from all different walks business owners, politicians, donors, big fundraisers for the president reach out to his camp, tell them how important this race was, and tell them, give them information about our race and how important Tarrant County is. Now, of course, the president knows how important Tarrant County is. You don't run for president and not understand the importance of the largest Republican county in the country, certainly the only remaining Republican urban county in the country. And over a period of several months, with people reaching out to his camp and even at least one in-person meeting between some people and the president, I got a phone call from some people that were with him. Oh, I want to say this was probably the first or second week of December, and the president picked up the phone, and we had a really nice conversation and talked for several minutes about the race and about views and about my opponent. And at the end of the phone call, he gave me his endorsement and said he just needed me to go do one thing for him, and that was win. And I told him, well, you don't have to worry about me being outworked. I'll outwork anybody at anything I ever do, and I've done that on this campaign. And then I was fortunate, I guess it's been about 3 weeks ago now, when he was in Houston to do a rally in Conroe. I was fortunate to go backstage before the rally started with my wife and our oldest daughter, who is a fan of the president. Well, the whole family is, but we were fortunate enough. We got to go backstage, got to visit with him, take pictures with him, and visit a little bit. And, you know, everybody that's ever met the president, and same thing happened to me on the phone call, same thing happened when we actually met him and visited with him. He's very warm. He's very genuine. He looks you in the eye. He's not looking around at the next person he can shake a hand of, talks to you. He's witty. And so often America sees presidents, Republican presidents, on the defensive because of the way the media attacks them. And he's just very warm, genuine, witty, and it was a great meeting, and it was an honor to have his endorsement, as you can guess.
Are there any stories you could tell us or examples of what you just said the president knows? Did you meet him?
Any stories about what?
Any stories or examples? You talked about how he was witty, nice, he's engaging with you. What is a story, something that there was a conversation with you had with him where you found him to be witty?
Some of the conversation, I would just say, would be private. I mean, he asked about the race and, you know, what some of the issues were, things like that. I guess one thing that I think people might find amusing, when he asked me how the race was going when I met him in Conroe, we chatted about that a little bit, and he said, well, I said, you know, thank you for the endorsement. That was, you've been very, very helpful. And he said, well, did it give you a big bump? And before I could answer, he said, of course it did. And you know, he smiled, that Donald Trump smile that for those of us on my side of the aisle, most of us at least, have come to appreciate. I've met and talked to multiple other people that have been around him, and he's a very personable guy. I mean, when he met our family, my wife said, you know, he looks you in the eye, and if you've ever been around a lot of politicians, some of them are not even looking at you when they're talking to you. They're looking over your head or looking around. Who else do I need to see and say hi? Just gives you his full attention, like you're the only person in the room, which is what people in elected office or running for office ought to be doing. It's about the people, not the special interests, and not the government.
Your campaign has been growing some momentum in the last couple of months. You won a straw poll in Hearst by quite a big margin, another one in Arlington. You just want to talk a little bit about those?
Sure. So there's a group that puts on something called the Candidate Fair and Straw Poll, Republican Candidate Fair and Straw Poll. It was at the Hearst Conference Center. And they don't do it every primary cycle, but they've done it, you know, four or five of the last six or seven primaries. And they invite the public, and basically any candidate on the ballot can get a, and you can be voters in the candidate. The candidates have to be at the table. It's free to come and meet candidates, talk candidates, and move on. You can about 6 hours of people coming in and talking and taking pictures and asking questions. Some people come in, they support you the moment they walk in, they just want to take a picture with you. Other people come in, they don't know who they're voting for. They want to ask you questions. They want to see what you'll say. They want to look you in the eye. So it's a mixture. And but it was a very enjoyable event. There are five people running in the Republican primary for Tarrant County Judge, and with a five-person in a five-person race, we got 65% of the straw poll vote. And I think they had 3,000-4,000 people come through there. I don't remember exactly how many voted in the poll. Some people came through, met people, and didn't vote. But it was a pretty significant number. So we won that one. And then I guess it was just last week, maybe the week before, four Republican clubs in Arlington joined forces and put on their own candidate fair and straw poll. It was just a one-night deal, about 2 hours. And each candidate got to go up and talk about their race and why they're the right person for the role, answer two or three questions, you know, give an opening, give a closing. I think they gave a closing. I don't know. But it was, you know, you talked for, I don't know, 5-6 minutes each. And then people were able to vote on those races. And we won that one with 68% of the vote. So our number actually went up from the Hearst poll. And, we, you know, when with five people on a ballot, getting 68% is, you know, that's no easy task. But we have a campaign that the grassroots are behind and are behind strong. But we also have a lot of more, I guess you would call them more establishment Republicans behind us also. You can't get 68% in a straw poll if all you're getting is grassroots. So we have all factions of the Republican Party are supporting us, are behind our campaign. The words we're getting, the feedback we're getting at the polls, early voting has been going on. It's been going on since last Monday. It was when it went on today. It won't happen tomorrow because of President's Day, but then early voting will run again Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. The feedback we're getting has been just incredibly encouraging and uplifting, and we feel really good about where we are. The momentum is definitely with us.
I believe it was shortly after the Hearst poll that your opponent, Betsy Price, released a commercial that talked about you trying to raise taxes when you were at Farmers Branch and used the Dallas Morning News as the source for that. When I was studying for this podcast, I tried to find something on that. I couldn't find anything on that. Would you like to respond to that at all?
Sure. Let me tell you why you can't find it. And I can't tell you if Betsy's camp knows this stuff, or they're just too stupid to figure it out. But the mayor of Farmers Branch, unlike most mayor council setups in Tarrant County, the mayor of Farmers Branch doesn't vote, has no vote, has no say in a budget, has no say in a tax rate, none. And all he or she can do is just sit there and say what they believe. But at the end of the day, there's five council members that vote, and the mayor's not one of them. Unlike Fort Worth, where I think there's eight council and a mayor, and most cities in Tarrant County, the mayor is a voting member of the council. You're just not in Farmers Branch. So there's some wonderful things that our council did in Farmers Branch when I was there, when I was the mayor, that I don't run around and try to take credit for because I didn't vote on it. I may have supported it. One of the things they said is I tried to champion a water park. I mean, that's just ludicrous. In fact, I told people that we don't need a water park. I told people we can repair the pool. A bond proposal for the water park, which I neither voted for because I couldn't, or supported anything related to the pool. I told them to not pass it, and it failed. So. But this is just one of many examples of the dishonesty coming out of their campaign. So early on, when we told people that she raised money for Planned Parenthood, she denied it. Well, then we put proof out. And then when we put proof out, then the story changed to, well, I didn't realize they were one of the beneficiaries when I went. Well, then we put proof out about how out front and open they were about Planned Parenthood being a new donor at this group she went to. So I don't know what her story is now. She's running around saying she at one time was at a Republican club saying she never went to a BLM rally. Well, then we put pictures of her at a BLM rally, out on the internet. We put pictures of her standing next to two people holding BLM signs. Now, these are pictures that from the media. Then we put the video and audio from, I think it was Channel 8 out, where she is saying, I hope they keep up their enthusiasm. I hope they keep this up. But she at first denied ever going to such a rally. Now it's come back, and now it's, well, yes, I went, but I was just there to keep the peace. So that story's changed. You know, you mentioned the Hearst candidate fair and straw poll. At the Hearst candidate fair and straw poll, you sign a contract to be part of that if you're a candidate. And part of it is only people can vote who are actually at the straw poll. It's very clear, written in the contract, every candidate has to sign it. Well, as soon as the candidate fair started, she sent out an email to her supporters that said, hey, voting for the candidate fair is open. Please go online now and vote. And the organizer caught wind of it, went and talked to them, came over to me and said, well, I think I'm going to disqualify her from the candidate fair and straw poll. And I said, no, don't do it. Let's just let it play out. And it did, and we won big. And, you know, I could go on and on and on about the things has come out of that camp that isn't true, that her consultant called somebody in town, said I was dropping out of the race at some point from the moment I entered. I've never even dreamed of dropping out of the race. At another time, he called someone and said, I hear Tim is switching races. I mean, just ludicrous, never happened. They can't keep their story straight. And when you have a floundering campaign that gets no support from the grassroots, none at all, when you have people, I mean, if you look at my endorsement list compared to hers, mine's a mile long. Mine has the 45th President of the United States, Senator Ted Cruz, Sheriff Bill Wayburn, District Attorney Sharon Wilson, multiple state reps, Beth Van Dyne, David Barton of Wall Builders, DFW Conservative Voters, Texas Homeschool Coalition, Texas Right to Life, Texas Values. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And when your campaign is floundering, I guess the way they think you hang on to power and hang on to relevancy is to start spreading lies. She repeatedly says we're lying about her record, but every single thing we've said about her record is documented in her words or in the words of the media, and people can check it out for themselves at therealbetsyprice.com. I didn't build the website. I hadn't paid for the website. It was another group that did it. I know what's on the website, and I direct people to go there because we verified that everything on the site is 100% true and accurate. TheRealBetsyPrice.com tell you everything you need to know about her.
Tim, moving on to your platform, one of the items you have on there is you talk about using a homestead exemption that's not used. I believe there's 9 that are listed right now on the appraisal district's website. What is this homestead exemption you're talking about that's not used that could be used to help put money back in our pockets?
Sure. So state law allows a county to offer a homestead exemption of up to 20% for tax relief for homeowners. So if anybody doesn't understand what that means, you know, if your house is valued at $100,000, if you have the 20% homestead exemption, you're only going to be taxed on $80,000. If you have a $1 million house, you're only going to be taxed on $800,000. So state law allows a county homestead exemption. Currently, I believe Collin County offers 5%. You don't have to offer the full 20. You can offer anywhere from 0 to 20%. Tarrant County has none. No homestead exemption of any kind. And what I plan to do when elected county judge is put that on the agenda for a vote of all the commissioners, and let's see if the commissioners are willing to vote down tax decrease for our homeowners. And my guess is they won't, not if they want to keep their jobs long. Another thing that I've proposed about finances and taxes, I've proposed a 20% property tax rate cut. Now, this is really important for people to understand when it comes to rate cuts. So property values in Tarrant County are shooting through the roof. And based on the appraisals we've seen for the last several years, you should probably expect the appraisal on your home or business to go up again the next time here shortly. And when it does, what we see happen, so elected officials in cities and school districts and the county set, and also the water district and the community college district, you know, all these different governing bodies, they set your tax rates. And what a lot of elected officials will do, and my opponent is just a perfect example of it, what a lot of them will do is they'll give you like a half-cent tax rate cut. Then they'll run around and they'll tell people that I cut your taxes, when in reality, a half-cent tax rate cut amounts to probably, these days in Tarrant County, about a 9.5% tax increase. So put this in perspective, if you have so Tarrant County's overall property tax rate is about 45 cents per $100 of value. So if you were to cut the tax rate from, let's say, 45, it's not exactly 45 cents, let's say it's 45.5 cents. So if you cut it from 45.5 cents to 45 cents, you got a half cent tax cut. Well, what that's going to do is likely going to raise your taxes, I mean, anywhere from 9 to 9.9%, depending on your appraisal. And those numbers are not like verbatim, but you get the gist of it. And so a frequent thing that happens in cities and on school boards and in county government is you get these little minuscule, really offer no tax relief of any kind cut. So then they run around saying, I cut your taxes, but the reality is your tax bill gets higher. So if you live in Tarrant County, if you have a home here, if you have a business here, you see, I mean, you can go back and look at your actual taxes paid over the last 3 or 4 years, and almost everyone has gone up. And the reason, even though there have been, quote, these tax cuts, but they're just tax rate cuts that just amount to smaller increases, although the increases are not small. So the 20% property tax rate cut will provide actual tax relief where it puts less money in the government's pockets and more where it belongs, and that's in your own. So there's a lot of work to do to get there, but I am committed to it, and I am going to do everything I can to bring pressure on our commissioner's court to pass that tax rate cut to provide real tax relief. And for those that won't do that, if we have some that won't, then we'll look to replace them next time they're up for election.
You just have to bring them on the show. We'll take care of them.
Happy to send them over.
So what are the nuts and bolts of this plan to lower the taxes by 20%? Where is the money going to be subsidized from? How do you plan on doing this?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't describe it as subsidizing anything. So the first piece is the appraisals are going to go up. So there should be increased revenue from the appraisals. Just based on what we've seen here for the last several years, I don't think anyone should expect property values to be dropping. Biden hadn't done enough to start that yet, although he's doing his best, but so we're not going to see it this appraisal cycle. So the other thing you do, and we did this in Farmers Branch, so this is the nature of government. The moment somebody leaves a government job, what does the government do? Do they look at this and say, hey, can we take some of these duties and spread them out amongst people we already have and not have to fill this position? No. They always rush to go fill the position. And so the first thing you do is you put in place a hiring freeze for non-law enforcement-related jobs. We're not going to do any hiring freezes or cuts on the sheriff's office or the district attorney's office. But for other positions where people leave the county, all right, we're going to freeze, and we're going to find ways for other people to pick up those duties if the job is even needed anymore, and it may not even be needed. So that's the first step in the process. Second step in the process is to go through and identify departments that are overstaffed and bloated, and it's government. They're all over the place, and I'll give you one perfect example of where they are. And this is one small example, but we're going to do this across the board, across the whole county. So the Tarrant County judge that is there now, he has 5 full-time people that all they do is report to him. Not another one reports to anyone else. They're just his employees to do with what he sees fit. Now, contrast that with Collin County. Remember, Tarrant County is the largest Republican-led county government in the state of Texas. Three Republicans on the commissioner's court, including the judge, two Democrats. Largest Republican population county in the state, Tarrant County. He's got five full-time employees that report directly to him, and they're his employees at his beck and call. The county judge in Collin County, which is the second largest Republican-led county government, all five Republicans by population, second largest Republican county by population, state of Texas. The county judge there has zero full-time employees that report directly to him and are at his beck and call. There is one administrative assistant that he shares with other commissioners and with the county administrator. So they all share this one person for their admin assistant needs. So that's one example of the bloat in Tarrant County. And in county government circles, Tarrant County is known to be bloated across Texas. And it's just, it's a known thing amongst those who are familiar with county governments and how they operate. And that's what happens when the people in charge have been there 15, 20, 25, 30 years. Is just the innovation and entrepreneurial thinking and new ideas and a business mindset. You know, after 20, 25, 30 years, I mean, you get institutionalized. You just become another bureaucrat, just an elected one instead of a hired one. And so what we'll do is we'll go in, we'll bring in fresh ideas. The other way we're going to do this is when opportunities arise to replace department heads. So what does government do in that scenario? They always just go look for another government person, somebody that has decades in government experience to go run the next to go run the government department. Well, we're going to take a different approach. We're not going to rule out people with government experience getting jobs, but we're going to look for people from the private sector, people that have been highly successful in business, that understand how to run businesses and how to operate them efficiently and effectively and get the most out of every dollar. And these may be people that are in the twilight of their careers, but they're looking to do something different. They've made enough money. They want to serve. They're not looking for this as their career job where they can go get a pension. And there's nothing wrong with working for the government and wanting to get a pension. I mean, everybody's got to work and make a living. But we're going to go find people that will come inside, take over departments, and run them in a more business-like manner where there's not all this waste. And then the other piece of this, the other step in this process, is to go in and audit all spending everywhere you turn and go to zero-based budgeting. So many governments, and I mean everywhere and not just pay it lip service, so many governments and government agencies and entities and departments, what they do is – you know, last year's budget was $102 million for our department. So they start at that, and then they factor in raises, and they factor in this, and they factor in that, and then they're always bumping it, always bumping it. We're going to train our people that that's not how we do things. We don't just always bump it, we always bump it. We start, what do you actually need, and then what can we do without? And we will have people that will cut costs, especially with a budget the size of Tarrant County. So the combined budget between the county government and the hospital district, both budgets are approved by the commissioner's court, by the way. The combined budgets are $2 billion. So, I mean, it's an enormous undertaking. And when you have budgets, a budget totals $2 billion, there's always places to cut.
I want to remind everybody that if you want to call in and have a question or comment for our guest, Tim O'Hare, who is a Republican candidate for Tarrant County Judge, you can call in to 515-602-9610. Press 1 to get into queue. Again, that phone number is 515-602-9610. Tim, a lot of times, and especially in my study of political cycles with politicians, we see them get up there and they kind of hot dog for votes. I don't mind if the politician gets up there and hot dogs for the votes. At the end of the day, I just want to be the one that relishes it. So are you telling us that citizens of Tarrant County will be able to get money in our pockets with this tax plan, or will you guarantee that?
Well, I absolutely can't guarantee it because it requires three votes. And I will be a vote that will absolutely, unequivocally vote for tax relief. I can't promise you or guarantee that I will get two more votes. I can promise you I won't pass a budget that doesn't, and I'm going to do everything I can to persuade our commissioners to not to do the same thing. And if we can't get it in the first year's vote, which is, and I'm, don't get me wrong, man, I'm not backtracking here. I'm not trying to say we can't get it. I think we can, but we don't even know yet who's going to be on the commissioner's court. So there are two, in addition to county judge, there's two other positions that are opening up, two other commissioners who are leaving their seats. One has only been there one term, the commissioner out of Arlington, Mansfield area, who's a Democrat. The other is J.D. Johnson, who's been there for, I think, three decades out of Precinct 4. So neither of those are running again. So we're going to get two new commissioners. And with, you know, you don't know yet what we're going to do, and they haven't looked at it, but we're going to do everything we can to make it happen. Here's the other thing, and I'm glad you asked that question, and I'm glad you asked it the way you did. So I don't want to try to sound like a pompous jerk here, but I don't need a job, and I don't need a pension. So God has blessed us. I've done very well in the private sector, and our finances have been managed very well. I'm a finance major. I understand money and finances and how to manage it, and we have my father-in-law as our financial advisor, and my wife, before we met, worked for him for many years. So we come from a family of just, you know, financial knowledge and that mindset, understanding numbers and dollars and interest rates and compounding and all those things. And so we've been blessed. I'm not doing this because I want a career in politics. I have a very successful career. I'll be taking a massive pay cut to do this job. I'm doing it, and I'm not going to do it and come in there and be like everybody else that does it. The only thing that matters is getting reelected. The only thing that matters is I got to keep the media and the people off my back. I'm coming in here to reform government. I'm coming in here to make real change, and I'm coming in here to stand up for things that I believe in and that I think a majority of Tarrant County residents believe in. I'm coming in here to stand up for America. I'm coming in here to stand up against the mob and stand up against the media. I'm coming in here to stand up for pro-family, pro-faith, pro-business, pro-constitution, pro-American values. I will do it boldly and unapologetically. I'm not going to mince words. And, you know, if that means that the people don't want me in there and I lose, well, so be it. I'm going to be who I am, not who I think I need to be to get elected or reelected. You don't ever have to worry about that with me. The things that I say and believe, they don't change. They're not going to change, and I'm not going to come back and say, well, I don't really believe we can do a 20% tax cut. I know we can do it. I just got to have two more votes to make it happen.
Well, with you talking about the makeup of the commissioner's court and that being up in air, that kind of makes me want to revisit a comment you made on the Mark Davis radio show this week and talked about this isn't a time to reach across the aisle. It seems like there might be something you need to do to reach across the aisle to get this done. Do you want to kind of explain that comment?
Sure. So we right now are in a very unique, is one way to put it, time in American history. You know, I'm a child of the 80s. I graduated high school in the 80s, went to college in the 80s. My formative years were in the 80s. And in the 80s, you know, everybody loved America. And almost everybody loved Ronald Reagan. And we were all at peace with each other. And we were all happy. Everybody loved being an American. And patriotism was at an all-time high. And you had two political parties that believed in the American dream, that believed in capitalism, that believed we should have a godly society. And today, that's not where we are. Everything is political. Schools are political. Entertainment is political. Big tech is political. Everything is political. And we now have two very distinct ideologies and parties in our country. We have one party that wants a godly society, and that party wants a capitalist society. We have another party who wants a godless society and a socialist society. There can be no compromise between those two ideologies. There's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. So I 100% stand by now is not the time to reach across the aisle as a Republican. Now is the time to stand up and fight. Stand up and fight for our country and stand up and fight for our values. Now, will I work with Democrats? Sure. Well, I'll work with anybody, and I'll be nice to everyone. But what do Democrats want to do to the corporate tax rate in America? They want to make it the highest tax rate on planet Earth. What do they want to do to everyday Americans, American families? They want to raise your taxes over and over. What do people involved in big government want to do? Raise taxes, raise taxes, raise taxes. Their view is we want a government-centered country. I don't. That's not what America's about. It's not what America is supposed to be about. I want a faith and family-centered country. I want a individual liberty and freedom-centered country, not a government-centered country. So I don't know what I would reach across the aisle with them over. They want to kill babies in the womb. Some of them don't care if you kill them after they're out of the womb. If they botch the abortion, there's no compromise there. I can't compromise with any of that. They want to tax you out of your home and tax every dime you make in income in any way, shape, or form. I can't go along with that. I can't compromise with that. So if you can find me a reasonable Democrat that will actually work with us on things, I would reach across the aisle. At the end of the day, we have three Republicans in office on the Commissioner's Court and two Democrats. I am very hopeful that in November of this year, we're going to have four Republicans and one Democrat, and that Democrat can either go along with the program or go find a different thing to do. And do we think for one second if Democrats had control of the Commissioner's Court, they'd be reaching across the aisle? No, they'd be doing everything in their power to grab all power they possibly could and shut us out. And Republicans that think the way to do it is, well, we've got to reach across the aisle, they don't understand the battle we're in, and you should run as far away from those Republicans as humanly possible.
You talk a lot about how under Betsy Price's tenure as mayor, the city of Fort Worth and Tarrant County has gone from red to purple here. Don't you think that comments like that are kind of tribalization that turn off swing voters that were in the middle?
So a couple of things there. I've never said Tarrant County is purple. I have absolutely said that Fort Worth turned Democrat. It absolutely turned blue. And under her leadership, if that's what you want to call it, when she became mayor, Fort Worth was solid Republican. Within 10 years, by the time she left in 2020, Fort Worth, and I'm talking about Fort Worth only, voted 60% for Joe Biden and 38% for Donald Trump. So Fort Worth has become a blue city. Tarrant County, on the other hand, we still win every down-ballot race countywide. Republicans still win it. The one thing we've lost is the top of the ticket. And last year when, I guess, gosh, that's now, well, in 2020, President Trump lost Tarrant County by less than a quarter of a point. And there were some serious issues regarding mail-in ballots that I think most Republicans believe there was some illegal ballot harvesting going on from Democrats. President Trump won the vote in Tarrant County in every respect other than the mail-in ballot and got just slaughtered by the mail-in ballots. So to directly answer your question about do I think – what was the question? Do I think – what I'm saying is what?
Do you think
devices?
Comments like that are causing more tribalization?
Well, I don't know what it's causing, but it's the truth. And, you know, what Democrats want to do with our country, they want to permanently change our country into a socialist nation. So I guess we can, if we want to elect Republicans who are going to, you know, talk nice and be sweet and say nice things, I guess we can do that. Me, that's not what I think we need at the moment. I think voters need to be told the truth and they need to know where you stand. And I think Republican primary voters especially are sick and tired of Republicans that stand up and say things they're going to do that they don't, stand up and say things they're going to fight for that they don't, and I think right now, at this day and age, with what we're seeing go on in our country, we don't need Republicans who think we can reach across the aisle and compromise with Democrats. Their ideology is so far left. You know, they like to refer to somebody like me as some far right person. I mean, the idea that I'm far right, like it's like some kind of evil thing, I mean, is just insane. And I'm what 90% of Americans thought 20 years ago. So I just reject that notion. I reject that idea. At the end of the day, if we want to keep Tarrant County Republican, we're going to have to fight for it. And, you know, look over at our neighbor to the east, Dallas County. Clay Jenkins gets in office. He stands up and fights for everything he believes in, which is almost the polar opposite of everything I believe in. And he went in, redrew commissioner's court districts as soon as he got to Dallas County to make sure he drew out a Republican, turned their county commissioner's court from a 3-2 Democrat majority to a 4-1 Democrat majority. And then he just went and redrew them again several months ago. And so the election that's happening in Dallas County in November, you're likely to see that commissioner's court go to 5-0 Democrat. So they're going to do everything they can to get power for Republicans regularly that don't know how to win. So they want to play nice, and I'm not talking about – I'm not going to tweet mean things to people, and I'm not going to be scream and yell at meetings. But at the end of the day, I'm going to fight for what I believe in and fight for what's right, and I believe those are pro-faith, pro-family, pro-America values.
Bob, I want to kick it over to you. Do you have anything you want to say or any callers you want to bring on?
Yeah, well, we got listeners. No one's pressed one to be on to you know, to ask any questions, but they're listening in. And I had a couple things I'd go back over just a little bit here with, I think, I'm sure it's been educational for me. Tim, I appreciate you very much here being on. I really enjoyed this myself. And I want to go back to talking about reaching across the aisle. Well, actually, the kind of Democrats we want, you don't have to reach across the aisle far. They'll be standing up and fighting for the same value. If it's and there is values that both sides should be standing up and fighting for together automatically. They ain't going to reach across the aisle.
There's
so
just not many of those
that.
Democrats left.
But that's what we need, though, and that's the other question I was going to bring up, too. When you say, I kind of look at it differently, that the Democrats, they're not Democrats. I believe the same thing on Republicans are. They're people that have got in these things and call themselves Democrats. And there's a lot of people believe that when they're voting D, they're voting for the Democrat. But actually, without knowing everything, with our media keeping everything blanketed down, they're really not Democrats. They're just bad people that's gotten into that category, you know, into that system. And so, I don't know. Not all Democrats are bad or anything, but there are some in there. And same thing on the Republican side. We've gotten so many in that are not really Republicans. They're just ways – I guess these people found ways to make an easier way for their life or you know, the joy that, you know, take advantage of stuff. But they're but anyway, you touched on a lot of things I agreed a lot with, Tim. Very good there. And that. But,
yeah, so
yeah,
you mentioned the thing about the Democrats and that they're people. And I guess I would say to you, I would much rather be living in a time like the 80s when we were all Americans and we were all together and we could argue civilly or debate things civilly and everybody could air their freedom of expression, their freedom of thought. We don't have freedom of thought anymore. If your thoughts in any way, shape, or form are expressed verbally or in written form, and they do not agree with the cancel culture's views, then they'll do everything they can in their power to marginalize you, ruin you, humiliate you, cause you to lose your job. That's what we have now. We don't have, and freedom of speech is a constitutional guarantee that you can speak freely to the government. So a lot of times people get confused. They say, I don't have freedom of speech because the cancel culture comes after me. Well, freedom of speech in the Constitution has nothing to do with what somebody can say about you on social media or how somebody can dox you or, you know, try to get your job. But we America's based on the free exchange of ideas, and the best ideas win. Well, we don't have that now because of cancel culture and the media. So if a person who is more right-thinking, a conservative Republican, airs their views, if in any way, shape, or form, the media or the mob, the cancel culture, can attribute what you said to some, quote, racist thing or motivation, that's all you ever hear. And we need to get back to the days of freedom of thought and freedom of expression as the norm, not the exception. And it can't just be one side that gets to be free to speak. We have to have all sides speaking. And this cancel culture mindset that we have, here's the good news. There are lots of Democrats that are sick of it. There are lots of Democrats that don't want to see it anymore. And what you're seeing with the number of Hispanics in South Texas that are now voting in Republicans in office, and the number of Hispanics who are coming over to the Republican Party, Hispanic people are pro-family, pro-faith, hardworking, and you've seen a radical flip between the two parties where now the liberals are the party of the elite. The West Coast, the East Coast elites, the media elites, the corporate elites. The Republican Party has become the party of the common man, of everyday people. And our views and ideas are more appealing. So don't get me wrong. When I'm talking about not reaching across the aisle, I'm talking about to Democrat elected officials who all they know how to do is divide. So Marxism is about division. And so you tell me which party this seems to most resemble, black versus white, rich versus poor, employer versus employee, union versus non-union, public school versus private school, business versus government. Which one am I describing? That's the Democrat Party today. They pit everyone against each other to try to create division. And people are open to have their own views. I don't believe Republicans are trying to divide everybody. I believe Democrats are. And so when I say reach across the aisle, I'm talking about the Democrat elected officials that all they're going to do is just sit there and cry race all the time, no matter what you say or what you talk about. In terms of reaching across the aisle to get Democrat voters to see the light and see, hey, this is a better way to live, you should be making decisions for your family, not the government making them for you. You should have the ability to chase your dreams and be as successful as you want to be. Those are Republican principles and ideals. I will never stop reaching across in that respect.
Yeah, well, I understand. Very good. Tim, also, I'll tell you what, we got a caller that does have a question for you here. I'll tell you what, we'll go ahead and bring them on here And I appreciate you saying, I agree 100% with you. I understand what you're saying. I believe I understand. I hope everybody else does, but I believe I understand 100% what you're saying. So let me open up the line here. And we have 7448.
Yes, sir.
All right.
I want Mr. Harris, since he's anti-CRT, I want to understand his take, because being Afro-American and the things my dad went through during Jim Crow and my foreparents, the monstrosity of critical, if you look at the word critical, the things that you've done to my foreparents and my father are critical because who they are.
The thing that who's done.
Wait a minute, sir, please don't cut me off. Ms. O'Hara, I listen to everything you say. I wasn't finished. And so I'm going to give you a chance to answer.
Well, I'm not going to remember it if you go on, so that's why I asked. When you said that you've done, that who's done?
Who? White America.
Okay. So white America has done this to you, okay? So have I done it?
We didn't come up. Your daddy did.
I bet your daddy did. Okay.
If he was in the South. So we not going to play this game, Mr. O'Hara. Just answer the question to the fact, why are you against the CRT?
Critical race theory is a Marxist teaching. It is an anti-American teaching. Critical race theory stands for the premise that people of color can never achieve their full potential in this country because every institution in this country is created by white people for the benefit of white people. And to tell children of color that you can't achieve your full potential because of whitey over here has stacked the odds against you where you can't achieve your full potential, I don't know why anybody would want to tell a child that. So in Southlake Carroll ISD,
because you ain't never been black, that's why. You ain't never been black, that's why. You ain't never been victimized by the bullshit
your parents have done. In Southlake Carroll ISD, they have tested all the races for what their grades are. They have it broken down by ethnicity. And blacks, Hispanics, whites, all have the same scores, no discrepancy. Asians, on the other hand, have a higher score than everyone else. But between blacks, whites, Hispanics, the scores are the same. So I don't know why we would want to teach kids inside that school district who are all having the same grades that America's a bad place. Now, critical race theory is not, and here's the mistake people make sometimes, critical race theory is not, nobody is trying to not teach about slavery, and nobody's not trying to teach about what the Nazis did in Nazi Germany. Nobody's trying to whitewash American history, but just critical race theory as a concept is it's all created by white people for the benefit of white people, and people of color can never achieve their full potential. And I just don't believe that, and there are too many success stories of people of color to prove otherwise.
But it's not for y'all to decide that, bro.
Who is y'all? It is. It is up to the people of
the
town.
Hold on. Whoa. You said South Lake Curl. Okay, the Afro-Americans are not the majority in South Lake Curl. But Renew America, Kevin Witt, Blanca Martinez, Yvette Malone, along with Renew America, what's his name, Wade, and these other cats that are founding this racist movement to infiltrate these school districts. But you didn't go to Dallas ISD with that. They didn't go to San Antonio with that. They orchestrated through Renew America. If you look at their racist content, and that's on them. You can do what you want to do.
Sir, honestly, don't.
We talking about you never heard of these individuals that I spoke of.
The ones you just said, I've never heard those names in my life. No.
Renew America.
I've never heard of Renew America.
Okay. Well, they behind it. And you might want
they
to check some of your
what?
Republican port, the attack of CRT,
okay.
Which
well,
is not
I've never
taught
heard
in,
of them, and
that,
I'm
that's not taught.
CRT, so I don't think they're behind
well,
anything.
Well, it's not taught. It's not taught in the public school anyway.
Well, yes,
it's
it
taught
is.
In college.
No,
what school
school?
District?
I know that's a Democrat
what
talking point
is?
That y'all like to
no,
say
no, no,
over
no, no,
and over
no, no,
and over.
No, this is an
Afro. Even the Fort Worth superintendent.
I'm not a Democrat.
They teach it in Fort Worth
Who?
ISD. So yeah, you're
no.
Just
they
wrong.
Don't. They teach culture. They teach culture. They teach culture.
No, they teach CRT. But you believe what you want to believe. And if they don't teach it in the schools, then why would you care if we're trying to keep it out of the schools? Because it's not in there. So why would you care?
No, I believe in teaching culture. I believe in teaching culture, heritage, and culture. And make sure that our children are continuing to get the equal playing field because we're 600 years behind the eight ball anyway. Jim Crow, they ain't even 40 years ago, bro. And some, barely. So don't act like the Constitution that labeled us as three-fifths human, which is documented in the U.S. Constitution. Also, understand me, if you look at the Dred Scott case versus Stanford will clearly tell you how America thinks of certain things. If certain things have been in place or
When you say the Dred Scott decision will clearly say what America thinks, when was the Dred Scott
1857.
So something that from 1857 clearly tells you how America thinks in the year 2022?
Yeah, Jim Crow.
Okay.
Jim Crow.
You have the right to your opinion.
I'm going to stand by my opinion, Mr. O'Hara. And good luck on your race.
As an American, you have every right to do that. And as an American, I have the right to stand by mine. And we ought to be able to do it without somebody trying to go after my job if I don't agree with you.
I have no problem with that, bro. I have no problem with it. It's a lot of Republican Afro-Americans feel the same way because we all been victimized by a system that's been in place to do things that's not right to a human. We talking about human beings. We ain't talking about race. We talking about human beings. You know, ask Emmett Till. Ask the mother cats that have been lynched and persecuted behind ungodly stuff, sir.
Well, obviously.
So for you, okay, number one.
It's horrific, and I'm not sure why we're talking about that on this show with me, but.
I appreciate your time.
Bob, would you mute him, please?
Okay, I think he ended for us there.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Hey, Tim, we're coming up to the end of the hour here and everything. I was just wondering if you want to plug what you got going on tomorrow at my alma mater.
I don't even know my schedule yet. We've got so many different things and events going on, and I'm going somewhere here and somewhere there, so you may have to remind me.
Okay, I can understand that. It's the debate forum that's going to be going on over at Texas Wesleyan tomorrow.
I wouldn't even call it a debate. It's a forum that's going to last about 25 minutes, so you don't get a chance to learn much. If people want to learn about me, what I believe, and what I stand for, they should go to electtimohare.com. We put out who I am, what I believe, what I stand for, what I'll do as county judge. That's the best place to learn my views and what I'm about, and people can always email me, and I do my darndest to answer all the emails personally. Sometimes a bunch come in at once, and I just can't get to them all, but we'll get an answer to just about anybody that sends us an email, and the email is info@electtimohare.com.
Well, I'm enjoying it.
Well, Tim,
I was going to say, real quick here and say that if you don't take this primary win, I'm going to say there's something wrong in our voting for sure. I mean, I got one of your brochures a little while back, and I told your wife I got one. She said, which one? And that meant you sent out more than one. So I was thinking, well, maybe you send some in certain areas. Like I do, sometimes we target different areas that you don't, you know, you send some this way for that. They know you here and they don't know you there, so you send them different way. But after I got that one, I have got a half a dozen from you. You have been, they've been coming in left and right, and
well,
I just can't see
good.
How,
that's
how
trying to reach the vote.
Bessie has any chance at all, and then with all the endorsements and that. And the only reason, if you don't pass this thing, it's going to be kind of like the Trump thing. He gets $25,000 at an event, and the other person gets less than $300,000, but the person with less than $300,000 wins. That alone tells you something's wrong. So if you don't go past the line on this, there's something wrong, I would think. But I'm not telling you to relax either. So, but anyway,
oh, don't
I,
worry
I think,
about
I think
that.
You're
we'll
doing
be
a great
working
job.
Our tails off until the very last vote is counted, up till 7 p.m. on Tuesday, March 1st.
Okay. So, yeah. Well, anyway, I think you're doing a great job, myself, really, and that. And we hope to have you back on the show. Take a break there. As soon as the primary is over with, as soon as you win, call us at night if you get rested up. No, I'm kidding. But we'll get with you in a few months down the road as you get closer and the other starts coming into sight there. I'd love to have you come back on. And that, so, okay, I'll let James take over and finish it up from here.
Yeah, Tim, I just wanted to thank you for coming on tonight, and I just want to say, as another person that was born in Generation X, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, it's good to see Generation X standing up and trying to do something finally, because we were a generation that was supposed to do nothing, if you remember.
That's exactly right. Well, thanks for having me on, guys. Always a pleasure.
Okay.
Right. Thank
we'll
you, Tim.
You soon.
Have a good
Thanks
night.
Well. God bless.
Bye-bye. You bet. Bye-bye.
James, we've got a few seconds here to the end here, and we'll be starting off our next show with our next guest. We'll open that up here.
Okay.
I guess we'll go ahead and start off that for our next show.
Okay. We'll be a short break. We'll be right back.
And with that, let's start the second part of the program with our guest running for Lieutenant Governor, Aaron Sorrells, and here is your host, James H. McBride.
Welcome back to the second hour, folks, of the Local Voter Education Podcast done here on blogtalkradio.com. Again, in addition to this, and other information can be found at fwdistrict5.com. This is our normal time slot from 8 to 9 p.m. on Sunday evenings. Bob, you back over there at the switchboard?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I believe for the second half, we're going to have Aaron Soros come on, and he's running for lieutenant governor on the Republican side of the ticket. Do we have Aaron on the line?
Well, let's see if we do or not. Caller 4444, is that you, Aaron?
It is me.
All right, Aaron. Thank you for coming on, and here's James.
How you doing, sir? I appreciate you for coming on tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Would you mind just telling the people out there who you are and what you're about?
Who I am? Well, I'm a small business owner. I've been married for 17 years. I've got three boys that actually – it's changed. I've been running that now that I've been running this long. So one just turned 15, about to have a 12 and a 9-year-old. So, and what kind of got me into this is I watched the government mess with my freedoms, whether from the trying to shut our businesses down and telling us we had to wear masks. And of course, then it gets into the vaccines along the way. And 6 months ago, I took my 11-year-old son into Cook Children's Facility in Fort Worth. And the nurse and the administrator, and eventually it ended up being three nurses, and they talked to the doctors. And ultimately, after a 15-minute argument, they looked at me and said, "We're not denying you service. You're choosing not to wear a mask." And I said, "So you're choosing not to fix an 11-year-old's broken foot over your mask policy?" And they just looked at me with a blank stare, and they did nothing. And so I made a couple calls to Paxton's office and a couple other people, and I said, "Hey, what's going on?" They said, "Well, they're private business. They do what they want." And I said, "This is unacceptable." I said, there's one thing you don't do. You don't mess with a man's family, especially his children. And that's what they did. So, that was my final straw. They took everything else. They tried to take everything else from me as they could. And then they basically took my medical freedoms away from me as a father because I wasn't able to go to follow-up appointments and I wasn't able to do anything else. So that's how I got into this. And, from this point, I'm trying to take a business aspect to this government instead of the politician bureaucratic system that we have now, and I'm trying to go back and do things the way I'd run my business, which when you get 5-star review after 16 years in business, that normally means you know how to take care of things and take care of your customers, and the constituents are my customers. So that's my job, that's my goal, is make sure that the I'm representing the people the way they want to be represented. I'm not up there to get paid off by lobbyists. I'm not up there to do their stuff. I'm trying to get the government out of our lives and off our necks, and that's my goal.
Aaron, what is the industry that you're in with your small business you have?
I do window treatments and outdoor patio shades. So.
Okay. So this is your first foray in the world of politics, correct?
It is indeed.
Okay. So much change can happen more at the city level than at the state level. What made you decide for the first time to get into a state race?
Well, because the most powerful position in Texas is the lieutenant governor, and what I watched is that the governor was ruling by mandate, and the lieutenant governor did nothing to stop him, and unfortunately, through the use of TABC and through the licensure programs and everything else, the state-level government was doing everything they could to keep it where the cities and the counties and all the local-level people couldn't actually do their jobs without potential consequences from the higher-level government. And so I decided it was about time that we go after the lieutenant governor, because at that point nobody was challenging him, and I wasn't going to let him get away with letting Abbott do what he did. So, we need someone that's at the lieutenant governor position that actually gets the priorities of the people done and accomplishes the goals that we ask them to do, and also gets off the city and the county level, because right now they are basically controlling us. Demanding what county judges do is what they were doing originally, deciding who was essential or not. And the county judges and the city levels were like, "Well, what do we do? I mean, you still got school districts trying to do mask mandates. You still got all this stuff. None of that is lawful." And so from the lieutenant governor position, I can put the pressure back on the right people to say, if you continue to follow these rules, there will be consequences. That's their job. Get out of the way and let them do their jobs. And so that's why I went for this position, because we've tried local for a long time. And ultimately, the guys at the top keep trying to control us, and we need someone up there that's actually fighting for the cities and counties to have their power back where it belongs.
one of the strongest powers that the lieutenant governor has here in the state of Texas, as you said, in addition to being the strongest person in the state of Texas politically, is their ability to dictate the intent calendar inside the Senate. What would you do to help make sure things move through?
Well, the first thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to use my power to purposely stop conservative legislation, which is what Dan Patrick has done. He doesn't like to let people vote. He lets everything get killed in committees, you know, and that's his whole intent, right? You know, because then these guys don't have to ever answer for their lack of voting records because, well, it never got to the floor. My job is not to rule like a dictator and decide everything that doesn't get to the floor. My job is to get the legislative priorities done. And I have said that I will make sure that the 8 to 10 legislative priorities that come up this session, that nothing else will move off the lieutenant governor's desk until that happens. Because if you say you're a representative of the people, then you should be getting the people's priorities done first before anybody else's priorities done. And then from there, we will decide, we will go through all the programs. But I will make sure that committees aren't being used to purposely kill bills. I'll make sure that the people on the committees are actually, you know, qualified to do that job. And, you know, I don't want to be sitting up there and saying, well, I don't like this, so it doesn't. I'm going to make sure it doesn't get to be voted on. It's not my job. So, you know, that's kind of the difference in attitude. Dan Patrick's attitude is, well, this is a members club. We protect the club. We protect what we want. And that's you know, like I said, that means you're not representing the people. You're representing, you know, the establishment, and that's got to change.
On your website, you have a big list of issues that you want to try to tackle if you're elected as lieutenant governor. Of all those issues listed there, I can see some of them come from your personal experiences after your introduction, but what do you think is the most important of those issues?
The single most important?
Yes, sir.
It's almost impossible to say. Right now, I guess I would say right now the biggest issue is election integrity, because if we can't trust our votes, we don't trust our government, and you have what we have right now where people don't believe that the government that's elected is actually valid. So I would say that's the biggest current issue, if I have to pick one.
Well, we do have that audit going on. Scott's doing the audit of the election here. Do you have anything you'd like to say about that?
Look, if we really wanted to do this, we'd have done it a long time ago. I know we're trying to do it now, finally, but the fact is this should have been done a long time ago before they were trying to clean stuff and they were doing the things. We need to move off electronic ballots. We, you know, it's not just simply enough to do the forensic audits and go at this point. Yeah, we need to know who did this so they can be held accountable, but we've got to – our county levels should be doing more to counter against the Secretary of State, because we don't have to follow the Secretary of State. We don't have to use the electronic machines. We can do what we want to do. And right now, that's not the way it's happening. So we keep trying to go after these audits, but in reality, we've seen what happened in Arizona. Nothing comes to fruition. So until there starts becoming a bigger push from the state level, there's not enough money and there's not enough resources to get this job done. And so it's while it's a good effort, I don't think we're going to see any results until the state level starts actually putting a pressure down on all these groups to get it done.
One of the big issues we talked about with our previous guest was the issue of property taxes. I don't know if you heard anything about the podcast or heard him talk about the podcast before us or anything at all, but what is your view to help with property taxes here in the state of Texas?
My job is to eliminate property taxes. Property taxes are immoral. They should not exist. You cannot call yourself a free society when you rent from your government. They might as well take the own checkbox completely off of when you file for an application. I have a plan that's actually a website called eliminatepropertytax.com. It's pretty straightforward, eliminatepropertytax.com. And that is a system based on consumption tax that would actually allow us to transition in my first term fully over to that program. And I've said that is also one of my main priorities, because with the retired, everybody moving in is jacking up our house rates. I do live in Fort Worth, so I'm being affected like everybody else is. And you can't control that kind of taxing system. We didn't choose that our houses went up $200,000. So we need to have something that we can control that taxing rate. We know what we spend our money on, and we need to go back to that. And the plan I've backed actually covers more money. It still leaves 3% at the local levels and the county levels. It gives 7% up to Austin. It replaces 60-plus other taxes, so a sales tax, franchise tax, all these other taxes are gone, and we basically go to this one taxing system. And by doing so, we keep Austin from being a redistribution system, because if you go with pure sales tax, counties can't survive on it. You'd have to do a redistribution. This one will still allow us to use the systems in place to keep the, you know, things at a local level and then also at state level. And that's one of my biggest goals, because we've got to get – and I also want a constitutional amendment put up for it as well, so that we – not only have we had – right now we have income tax ban, but I want property tax ban along with it permanently.
One of the big things that property tax funds at the county level is going to be the school districts, along with some help from the state. Where would the money come to help with the school districts if your plan was to go through?
Well, that's the whole point of that 3%. Part of that is in the school districts, so the money – there is still money, and it generates just as much. The only thing, what we are doing, though, is changing that plan from the when we went to the Robin Hood program. Of course, it's not technically Robin Hood anymore, which is funny because it got ruled unconstitutional, but it's still, you know, they just modified it, and it's still the same way. We're going off of Robin Hood and going back to how it was before, where it's based on cost of living and things like that. So basically the money is staying in the district where it belongs. And so by doing so, the way this plan is structured, it will generate that it will generate the money needed. But the other problem is with all this, and this, everybody always wants to run this, we can't get rid of it because school taxes, and whatever. Like, I need to own my property. We can figure out any solution. I'm not going to justify not owning my property finally based on how much we can use a completely bloated school system. So one of the other things we got to do is we've got to get the school systems reduced, just like we got to reduce the state government too, because ultimately we can always replace money. The question is, are we going to actually reduce the systems that are causing us to tax as high as we are? And right now, all we keep doing is we keep generating more money with all these property taxes, yet we're not actually doing anything to reduce the government and reduce the load on the constituents. So the plan I've got has all of it documented. It's actually already been proposed. It solves all the funding. There's no issues for the counties, the cities, the roads, the schools. It's all there. And then we also need to work on reduction of all those programs too.
Another issue to discuss is border security, Aaron. What do you think that Abbott has done that hasn't helped with border security, and how would you fortify border security more than it already has been?
Well, right now, there is no security on the border. It's all a shell game. I've been down there multiple times. We're not stopping anything. Everything you see on TV, and they grab these guys and these women and these children, and then they're put over to Border Patrol, and Border Patrol just takes them over to Laughlin Air Force Base, and they fly them out, or they put them on a like a Greyhound bus with tax dollars and send them wherever their sponsor is. So the difference is, what I'm going to do is, from Lieutenant Governor position, my job is to get the funding. So my job would be to get the funding for the wall to be completed, get any additional stuff needed on top of the wall. We need to fund our state guard completely. We also need to fund state militias to help fill the holes with the state guard. We need to give them proper rules of engagement so that they are not having to wait to be shot at before they fire back. That is war. They're firing across an international border, and our men should be safe. They shouldn't be playing. We shouldn't be playing politics with their lives and their families' lives. We also need to fill up the water. The water is very low. Mexico hasn't followed along on filling up the water like they're supposed to for the last 5 years, so the water levels are extremely low, so it's making it easy to cross. Also making a water crisis at the border because the water levels are so low that it's causing them problems. And then the next thing I've said we would do is basically turn around the DOT buses. When the federal government tries to use our state freeways and our state roads to move these illegals on these DOT buses, we're just going to blockade them off and say, you're going to turn your butt right back around and go back where you belong. And when the federal government says you can't do that, I'm going to say, come stop us. I'm no longer going to let our citizens be invaded like they're doing right now. And I'm also not going to play these games where I like Dan Patrick does and say, well, they just won't let me do it. Well, I don't care what the federal government says. State sovereignty matters. That's why it's the 10th Amendment. And it's about time we get leadership in Texas that actually follows through and protects our people.
An interesting comment you just brought up in there to me, Aaron, was the issue of water. I want to pose the question to you here. Do you think it's time for the state to invest in desalination processes so we can get water out of the Gulf to help supply the state?
Yeah, we actually do need to look at some of that because a lot of people don't realize that we're running right head on into a water crisis in the state. Everybody worries about the grid, but they don't realize the water issues we're having. So desalination is not a bad idea. There's a lot of things we need to look at water. We need to stop trying to drain our aquifers for other projects. There's all kinds of things, but we do have a major water crisis that we've got to deal with.
And one of the other issues you have on here, Aaron, and it's one that Bob and I are totally for, I just want you to talk about a little bit, is term limits.
Well, we weren't supposed to be up there forever. We were supposed to go do our job and go back home. We weren't supposed to be permanent politicians. That's not the way when the Founding Fathers designed this. They didn't expect that. So, yeah, we need term limits. I mean, ideally we shouldn't have to have term limits, because if the American electorate got up and did their job, and when people didn't do their job, you know, we voted them out, we wouldn't have to worry about this problem. But unfortunately that's not ever been the reality. So what we need to do is we need to be voting in term limits, and I will push heavily with that from the lieutenant governor position, because I don't think anybody should be up there forever. The longer you're in the swamp, in the cesspool of Austin or D.C. or wherever it may be, the more tempted you are and the more corrupt you become. So we need to, you know, remove that, get people back to understanding the real world, because when you've been in Austin, like when you've been up there, like Abbott's been up there 30 years, and I think Patrick's been up there close to 20 now, or what is it, 12 to time, I forget. Anyway, I think it's 12 actually right now for Patrick. So when you've been up there that long, you forget what reality is. You forget what it's like to be a normal citizen in the world again. And so we need to start putting people back to where they belong, so that we get fresh blood in there and change things out all the time.
Bob, I know this is something you're very passionate about as well as me. Do you want to jump in here on that?
I'm sorry. What was the
We were talking about term limits.
Or the term limits.
Term limits.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I am very passionate on that, and I think that's it's kind of a catch-22 here, you know. We need council members in that will help us put in term limits, but the kind of council members they place in are council members that definitely won't support term limits. They can make sure. So it's kind of hard, unless we get more people voting, that we can change something around or start breaking ice in Fort Worth. Aaron, what city do you live in? I don't believe I caught that.
I'm in Fort Worth.
Oh, you're in Fort Worth. Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just going to say, if you don't make it as lieutenant governor, have you thought about running for mayor? But anyway, we are definitely looking for some replacement.
To do if I don't win, but we'll see that. We'll see what happens in 8 days first.
Sure. I don't mean to put you on the spot. I'm so anxious to try to get. That's what I wanted to ask Tim a while ago. You know, if it was too late for him to stop running for county judge and run for mayor or something. You know, because we're in bad shape in that department. But yeah, term limits. And I think something nice would be like, as far as council, we have a 2-year. Times and I think 3 terms, and then step down for one, but then open the door back up after you step down for at least one, to where which would be good to refresh yourself. If you're doing a good job and come back, if your replacement doesn't, I think we'd be good. But nevertheless, it should go out to the public, and it should be a decision that everybody has a point of view on, and the you know majority, whatever they think's best. But yeah, some kind of term limits. It's not supposed to be a full-time job. And that's what these people are making it. And I think that, and one other thing that needs to be, is campaign contribution limits too as well. I think that would be good to make these candidates work more instead of, you know, like we put $2 million or $2 million in a mayor's job. They just really bought that, you know. So anyway, campaign contributions and term limits are two things that we need to help start getting better, you know, candidates running and a better chance of getting better candidates in there. But,
hey Bob, between the runoff on the mayor race here, it was $2.8 million that was spent on that total race between those two.
Oh, it's between both of those? How much?
Yeah, $2.8 million.
$2.8 million.
Sorry,
well, it keeps getting higher. You know,
$1 billion with the. I was gonna say we've only lost what $1 billion now or something with the Panther Island project. So you know, there's nothing to worry about in Fort Worth.
Well, what are your thoughts on Panther Island?
I don't know. Kate Granger should have been replaced a long time ago for getting her freaking son put on the head of the board of that. And back during, what was it, 08 or whatever. And, you know, it's a boondoggle. I mean, it's absolutely disgraceful that we're using water district money, government pet projects, to fund a private island designed for commercial purposes in the middle of our Trinity River. Like, what are we doing? Like, that should not be on our tax dollars. It shouldn't be on our water bill. Like, that should be a private-funded project. And I mean, heck, as much as Betsy Price let it go forever. Now, even she was like, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. Even she had to finally put a halt to it for a while because of what was going on. It's disgraceful. That should never have been led by a congressional district member, which is what it was. Kay Granger took the lead on that and got all that done. And now all of us are paying for it in Fort Worth, and yet somehow we never seem to get Kay Granger out of there. So.
Well,
the thing that was kind of shocking.
You can't tell.
The thing that was kind of shocking to me about it was all that money came in right here at the end, and if you look at the way that the districts were redrawn, that puts it in the 33rd district, which is going to be Mark Deasy's district now.
Oh, God.
Lovely. Even better.
Well, that's another thing I've been fighting for 5 years now is the redistricting of Fort Worth. It shouldn't be patronized. It shouldn't be going on. When it started, it was off a petition, you know, charter vote because it wasn't advertised. So we only had less than 1% of the population voting on adding two council members. That was insufficient. It should be put back on the ballot, and I've asked 5 years to do that. And then the task force chair, the first one, came from Washington, Relaine Miller, who worked with Nancy Pelosi. She oversees the chair of our first task force, and then I have her on tape basically barefaced lying to us, talking about transparency. And when I ask her if we can record our meeting, she hums and says, no. So, I mean, that's not transparent. That right there should be enough to say, and you play that for city council, you say, well, that shows we're tainted here. We got to stop. Something's wrong. This woman's not telling the truth. It just goes on. So it doesn't matter what you expose wrong. They just keep marching on with it because they already got their mind set up what they're going to do, regardless what you prove or not. And it should come to a stop. And then for a slap in the face, they try to railroad and run through 13 propositions to put on the – they read the 13 propositions that same 2015 or 2016 charter. They amended 13 of them and put it on the council agenda to pass to go on the ballot in May. But they didn't put on the one that I've been asking for 5 years. That's Proposition 2 about adding two more council members and put it on billboards. They didn't put that on. And another one they didn't put on was Proposition 6. That means you can live here only 6 months, and then you can run for mayor's office. I think you ought to be here at least 24 months before you run for mayor's office. With the kind of money they spend, it's nothing 6 months to plant somebody here and then put them in office with the kind of money they're spending. But if you haven't lived here for 2 years, that'd be a little bit more harder and have a little more roots. So that should be amended from 6 months to 24 months. They didn't put that one on either. But the first thing they put on there is a triple in pay raise, $50,000 more for council and $70,000 more for the mayor. But these others they didn't even touch, return, or talk about. So it's just amazing. But anyway, okay, I better change that decaf
well,
coffee.
That
I talk too much sometimes. Go ahead.
Yeah, on that note real quick, funny side note real quick, my brother-in-law was going to run for Tarrant Appraisal District to try to help fix some of those problems, but you have to be required, you have to live in the state, you have to live in Fort Worth, well, Tarrant, for 2 years, but yet for mayor, 6 months?
6 months.
And the funny
mayor.
Thing is my brother-in-law
or
had
council.
Lived here his whole life, but he moved, yeah, so he moved
it
to,
just, it needs to be amended,
or councilman, right.
You know, it should
well,
be
but
amended,
thing,
but they didn't bother putting
that
on there.
My brother-in-law lived here his whole life. He moved down to work for Microsoft for 2 years in San Antonio, comes back, and he can't run for president yet. He's lived here for 30-something years. He just had a two-year stint away, and they don't – So what I was going to say, though, my other thing was transparency. Since you were talking about transparency, I will tell everybody. So the one thing I have pledged, because I'm tired of people saying they're going to be transparent, but then we never get it, is that I have now made a pledge. It started as a joke, and then I said, I don't care. I'll do it. So I am going to install a camera in every single one of my suits, and the entire time I'm in Austin, you will see everything that goes on.
Sounds good.
Have fun with that.
Real quick, let me mention one thing real quick here out there. That in about 5 minutes, we'll be coming up to half the hour. I'll be glad to take callers. We have listeners, and we have some want to call in. I just want to let them know in about 5 minutes, we'll be at the half point, and then we'll take your call, okay? So go ahead, James. Y'all can take over. Go ahead.
Yeah, and if you want that number, it's 515-602-9610. All you have to do is press 1 to get into queue. Again, the phone number is 515-602-9610. Aaron, one of the things you don't have that your opponents or your main opponent has is name brand recognition. Also, finances are another big issue. How are campaign finances looking for you, and what are you doing to get your message out there?
What I'm doing is doing things different than everybody else has told me how to run. Same thing I do with my business, and that's why I'm a very successful business right now in a very hard market in Dallas-Fort Worth. I don't do things the same way. I don't run around dropping mailers in people's nails so that I can spend millions upon millions of dollars and get almost no reach. I don't do things the way they did. So I've changed my mentality. I didn't change my mentality. I changed the way I do it. I've gone heavy after social media. Because we need the 45 and under crowd to start voting, and they don't exist. When you go to grassroots meetings, the average age of most of your grassroots or your event meetings are 60-plus. We can't continue to depend on the 60-plus only to be engaged. We need everybody to start being engaged if we're going to make a difference. So I've done that. And I've gone to areas that I was told not to go. I've been down in the South. I've been in the Valley. I've been in South Texas. I've been, you know, I've gone to the East. I mean, I've gone West and all the rural counties there. A lot of the rural counties there have gone to East Texas. I've done things different than what they told me to do. And you know what? I'm not going to have the finances. You know why? Because everybody's focused on Abbott and nobody wanted to help the lieutenant governor candidates. They all want Patrick out. They didn't want to help us. So my finances are pretty much my personal finances. I've raised, you know, you can look it up. I've raised $10,000. And if anybody listening to this thinks that I can't win now because of that, then you are the problem with our system. If you don't go out and spread people's messages and you don't assist us in getting our message out, but then you want to complain that only the rich guys get all the votes, well, then it's because you didn't engage and you didn't help us. But see, what I've done is I've reached to people differently and people are spreading my message, because that's what we did with Trump, right? Trump didn't get elected because he had all the money. Trump got elected because we looked at him like someone who spoke like us, acted like us, and we went out, and when Trump put out a video, we spread his message. We went and bought his material. We talked about Trump to all our friends and family. That's why he won for the cheapest anybody's ever won a presidential election for. So if we want to keep getting the same results, then we keep asking people how much money they have. We keep worrying about it, whether or not they can get there with that, and that's what we get. This is about the people, and the people of this state and this country can make all the difference in the world by just going out and doing your job of engaging and talking to your friends and family and making that difference. And right now I'm already starting to get early results in, and it's starting to sound like I've done it. And it's starting to look like Dan Patrick is really worried because him and Abbott are prepping for runoffs. So if I do this, no one will ever talk about the guy in New Jersey again. They'll be talking about how I took Dan Patrick down. So we have to change our mentality of thinking if we're going to change that system, and that's what I've gone after, is I've tried to reach people and show them that I'm as angry as they are, that I'm just like them, and I'm going to go out and make a difference for them, and I've given them a reason to want to vote for me and want to tell their friends and family about me. That's how we make this difference, not worrying about the other stuff.
Well, Aaron, Bob can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe in one of our previous podcasts a few months ago, we were talking about voters in Tarrant County, and only 50% of eligible voters are registered in Tarrant County, I believe, if that's correct. Right, Bob?
Yeah, that's what last report I had, about 50% are unregistered voters is where we're at. And we have about – and the 40% of the register – well, see, the other – only 40% of the other register voters are – well, how did I get that wrong? Over 40% of the other register voters don't vote in our local election. So 50% is unregistered, and about 40% don't vote in our local. But if that was any help. 40%
well, Aaron,
of the voters said, listen, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. That's less than, we're around less than 10% vote in our local election. And I agree with Aaron one bit about the getting out to the people and having the money. Too much money we're buying. The candidates say buy, but it does, with all that money, is they take a person like Aaron or someone that's working hard at it, and they blanket it with all that other money that we're, they cover you up. You don't get in hardly. And that's why I think campaign contributions are bringing on down, so that people like Aaron or people, there's a lot of people who are using their own money. I use my own money and that. And, you know, and don't raise that amount of money. It seems like if you want the big money, you got to go to dishonest people to get it. That's where you get it from. And there you are, you know. So campaign contributions are a big thing. They have it in Florida, and I think it would be a great thing to look at, to explore and start fighting to try to get here in Fort Worth is campaign contributions and make people work for these council jobs, you know. And let's weed out the ones that get in there in 8 months. They cut their workload in half by cutting us down from 4 council meetings a month to 2 council meetings, and they want to triple their salary all in 8 months' time. That's unbelievable, but that's what they're doing. So, anyway, I think that would be a big thing. But anyway, yeah, go ahead. I might have got off track there a little bit, but go ahead.
No, you're fine. Aaron, first time I ran for office, there was a lot of things that I learned that just kind of shocked me about. I'm sure Bob in his 3 cycles has had plenty of things that he's learned that shocked him. What is one of the main things that when you got into this process you learned and you're like, wow, I did not know that?
Wow, plenty. But you know, one of the things that bothers me the most, so I run a business and I do a lot of our accounting. I understand it. I'm a math person. I've now realized that most of our Texas ethics are nothing more than a gotcha game. Because when you start filing your reports, you start putting these things in, and any decent accounting software, when you put in like how much loans you've had, how much money you've given, how much expenditures you have, it would just automatically total down at the bottom and say, well, this is what you have left, right? No, it doesn't do that. It has all these gotcha games. Well, how much money do you have left on hand? How much do you have this? How much do you have this? How much do you have this? And so you have to manually enter these things. And all it takes is one little slip up. And now they, if you challenge them, right, now they can easily come back and say, oh, he did an ethics violation, and they've got something on you. So, you know, when it was mind-blowing to start doing the ethics reports and seeing how much, how easy it is to make a mistake and basically give them some kind of blackmail or something on you. Even including the personal financial statement we had to do, it was the most. It made no sense from anything I've ever filled out, filing for business loans and all this stuff. I was like, "What? This makes zero sense." Like, what? Like I said, the ethics process in Texas, from campaign financing to everything, it needs to be completely overhauled. It's a disgrace that this is what we have for 2022 for ethics to report and how they handle it.
Aaron, you talk about accounting. So do you have a degree in accounting?
No, I don't have a degree. I was always really good at math. So when we run my business, you know, you got to save money where you can. So we have an accountant that does our more specific stuff in a CPA, but I can pretty much go through my P&L and run my books, and I understand how to, you know, how it all works. I actually had to fix some stuff the other day that my previous accountant wasn't doing. I had to tell my CPA, and the new CPA was like, yeah, you're right, they've been doing it wrong. So I understand it, but I don't have a degree in it.
Hey, James, how about we open up the lines here? For anybody that wants to
absolutely
talk.
Just go ahead and open it up.
Okay, we got one caller here on, and we'll open that up now. Well, let's see here. You know what? Caller disappeared between now and then. Oh, I think. Let's see. Okay. Well, we lost the caller there. Never mind. Go ahead. The caller had dropped there, so maybe they'll call back or whatever, and that will. They go ahead. Anyway, that was the only one that had their hands up. So. And like I said, they can call back in if they want to call back in, and we'll be glad to take their question. So go ahead, right where you're at.
Sure. You know, one thing I've talked about to a lot of people, Aaron, and we talk about the issue of trying to raise more revenue through taxes. You know, conservatives always want to run from this conversation, but if we look at Colorado, it's been pretty productive in what it's done with it. Do you think it's time to end the prohibition on marijuana and tax the hell out of it?
So here's two parts of this. I lost an endorsement for saying this. It's funny. I believe we should have medical marijuana. Don't sit here with the holier than thou. I know we're in a Bible Belt, and I've been here my whole life, I'm fifth generation. But don't tell me that you want to say that we can't have medical marijuana, but then you want to drug people with big pharma. That is a synthetic drug. It has all kinds of things wrong with it, and there are kids with seizures and all kinds of things that medical marijuana could easily solve a lot of the problems. What, do we just need to go get it FDA approved and then everybody will say that's okay? Right? I mean, that's the hypocrisy with how we handle that. As far as regular marijuana goes, it's not a campaign like I'm going out to do it. But my thing is, I'm here to be a limited government. It is not my job to control the people of Texas. So I have said that I believe that the vote should happen and we should get it on there because everybody needs to know where their representatives voted, because it's not up to me to control. And right now Dan Patrick has control that he won't even meet with the cannabis people for medical or non-medical. He won't even talk to them. So yes, it's time that we actually let the vote happen. We get it out there and stop being hypocritical. Drunk drivers kill people a lot more. And when you're drunk, you have much more problems going out and making dumb mistakes because you lose all inhibition. Typically when you're high, you're probably just going to sit there and not go do much. So, you know, we've got to change this mentality. And I think the vote should be allowed. And anyway, like I said, it actually cost me an endorsement, so it's kind of funny that you bring that up.
that's why I brought it up, because sources I have that tell me that the reason that it won't come to the floor for a vote is because of Patrick. He is the one holding it up. So that's the reason 100%. I wanted to ask you that question.
Yeah, I actually talked to the pro-cannabis people that, and they said that Dan Patrick won't even meet with them. He won't even have the meeting.
Do you have any thoughts on Delta 8 or Delta 10 at all?
Not really. I mean, like I said, it's just weaker versions. I've actually had to fire an employee because he kept smoking Delta 8 when he was on the job, and I was like, "Yep, you're fired." I was like, "Dude, you can't do that. You can't be under the influence when you're working on my job site." So I've had to deal with that directly. But it goes back to the same thing. I mean, if we've legalized it, I mean, I think we need to heavily go after decriminalizing a lot of this stuff. Like, you've got the Cullen Street Bakery situation that we all know about now, if you paid any attention to what's going on there. And the guy took $17 million, sold $17 million, cost how many people their jobs, the growth, raises, all kinds of things at Cullen Street Bakery. And I think he got 10 years, and his wife got 5 years probation. Yet we got people locked up for weed for 25 years. I mean, we've got to change our system and our thought process. So I want the government to go back to being limited, get out of our lives, and let people make those decisions. And if you make a dumb mistake, then there will be consequences for those mistakes. But we don't need to be penalizing and doing all this stuff. And, you know, Delta 8, Delta 10 just go back to the same stuff. It's them trying to get around the fact that weed's not legalized.
Something we talked about with the previous guest, and I'm going to bring up with you, is we talked about how hard the divide is in this country and how both sides are just so tribalized. I want to ask you, where do you think as a society we lost this ability to agree to disagree?
Actually, one thing I want to answer back. I forgot to say something. There was a two-part to that last question. I just thought about it. As far as the revenue goes, I'm tired of people talking about the revenue, and I've told all the cannabis people don't bring it to me again, because when you give the government more money, they just blow it anyway. So the revenue argument is pointless. Either you believe in limited government for it, or you don't. Don't throw the revenue thing at me. So that I forgot to answer that part of that. But as far as the division goes, we aren't as divided as people believe we are. Are we more divided than we've been since what I've seen in my lifetime? I don't think the majority of us are. What we've done is we've allowed social media to push us to the polar opposite. It directs you to that group, right? It's kind of my problem with the whole concept of True Social and Getter and all these other social media programs, right? Like, I actually engage people on Twitter, and I engage people on Facebook, and I engage people in all these other ads. Why? It's effectively our battlefield. If you only want to go into your own little bubble, guess what? Yeah, everybody's going to agree with you. But as Republicans, we're not going to bring people back to our party by continuing to just stay in our bubble. That's what the GOP wants us to do. Like, I was told, don't go to the Valley. Don't go to the rural cities. Just stay in the five big counties. That's all that matters. Don't worry about the rest of the people. They won't vote for you anyway. They don't care. And I was like, that's not how you treat people. So I went out and I've reached out to these. I've been in downtown Dallas in a barbershop. He came to one of our events and he saw it. And he's like, man, he's like, I can't believe you guys are Republicans and I believe so much like y'all. He's like, you're speaking to the same thing we believe in. So he's like, can you come to my barbershop? And I think he was shocked that I said yes. And I actually had time. So I went the next day and spent 2.5 hours out there talking to, you know, everybody that came in. And all of us were getting along. I mean, there were a couple of things we disagreed on, but that's fine. But we have to go back and start talking to the communities. Like I said, back to why I wanted to be a lieutenant governor. I want to get the state government, and I want to push back against the federal government, get state sovereignty back. I want to get the state government off of the city and the counties and all everybody else's life, because if we ever get back to being a limited government, the churches will grow in strength, our communities will grow stronger, and we will start learning to depend on each other again instead of looking to the government to solve our problems. As long as we look to the government and the media to solve our problems, we are going to continue to have a divisive country. We need to go back and speak to each other. And because most of us agree, 85 to 90% of us, when we sit down and have a conversation, we agree. The question is, do you want the government to solve your problem, or do you want it to go back to limited government? I believe we need to go back to limited government and empowering the people to be the individual and have the ability to take over their communities and actually engage again. And that's what we need to focus on. And so instead of talking about how we're divisive, we need to start talking about how we can bring everybody back together and make everything a better world for people. Hold it.
When it comes to the issue of the Second Amendment, are you fully open on it? Do you have any restrictions on it?
Say that again. Sorry, I had something just – I interrupted my call for a second. What were you saying?
No, you're fine. When it comes to the issue of the Second Amendment, Aaron, are you fully open Second Amendment, or do you believe there should be limitations to it?
Well, I posted this the other day. I believe it says not to be infringed. Not to be infringed is the Second Amendment. It is not. It comes before the 10th Amendment. Therefore, it is not a state's right, and the federal government's already been told it's not to be infringed by that. So it is not a state's right or a federal right. We have a constitutional right to have our guns because the only thing that protects us against an out-of-control government is our weaponry. That is it. So uninfringed does not mean you can have background checks and red flag laws and all these things. It means get away from my Second Amendment and leave it alone. And right now we don't have that because we got open permitless carry in the name of constitutional carry. So, no, I believe that we should have the right to own our stuff. We should have the right to defend our property. And it goes back to our conversation with police officers. Why are we in such a police state? We used to have peace officers. They were there to keep the peace in the community because it was on us as the individual to protect our families and our lives. And they were there to keep the peace. We've moved into a police state, and so now they want to control us. And the police unions are the reason that Dan Patrick didn't get us our true constitutional rights back, because all these police unions want all these restrictions on them. No, there are no restrictions. I have the right to defend myself against anybody at any time. So that is the way it should be. And anybody that tells you they are pro 2A, but then doesn't seem to understand that the uninfringed means uninfringed, then they're not pro 2A. So that's why I've actually made a post about that people need to start asking if your current elected official didn't stand up there and write a bill to remove all the restrictions off our Second Amendment, then they're not pro 2A. So if the NRA endorsed them or GOA endorsed them, well, they're not, because they didn't do their job. And if your candidate is running on pro 2A and he's not telling you he's going to go up there and remove all the restrictions off of our Second Amendment, then he's not pro 2A either. So that's my stance on it. And I think, that's going to be my goal as Lieutenant Governor, to actually get our Second Amendment back.
Aaron, you talk about uninfringed. Do you think it's time to drop the fee that's paid for an LTC and just be able to take the class in the firing range and then be able to carry like that?
I'm sorry, where uninfringed doesn't even require a license. We didn't get licenses when this country was founded. So,
but I'm saying we're a constitutional carry, but you also have an LTC license, but you have to pay the state a fee to get the LTC license. Should we drop that fee that's paid to the state and just let individuals take that class and do their firing at the range to be able to obtain an LTC here in the state of Texas?
Well, I mean, it goes back to the same question. Yeah, you shouldn't have any fee, but the question is, why do I need to go get a license from the government to get to carry a gun? That's my point. You're infringing on the pay. You're telling people that they have to go get the government to approve of them, take a class to get their Second Amendment right. That's not what the Constitution says. It doesn't say with license. It says uninfringed.
It's either uninfringed or none. It's like you're not a little bit pregnant. Either you're pregnant or you're not pregnant, one or the other. So
correct.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's infringed. I understand exactly what you're saying, I believe, Aaron. So you shouldn't be asking for a license. You shouldn't be asking the governor anything. That's the way I got it. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
Aaron, I know one of the other things you talked about on your website with issues was the sanctity of life. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, sure. The people of Texas asked for abolish abortion. We got the heartbeat bill. While it's working really good right now, the left doesn't play games for the battle. The left plays the game for the war. So we let lawyers weasel around and make changes to the standing law in order to create the heartbeat bill. Gavin Newsom has already said that if this goes through, the left is going to start rewriting bills to change how standing law works with every other bill so that they can go after gun manufacturers and other conservative organizations. So we should have done what the people of Texas asked. We asked for abolishing abortion. We should have done it. That's it, plain and simple. I'm not saying criminalize the women in this situation, because that's always the fun argument from there. We go after the doctors and all that and handle it from that side. But the fact is, we should not be allowing abortions. Life is life. It should be protected. And when they go into the whole rape situation, two wrongs don't make a right. So just because you were raped doesn't mean you get to do it. I mean, if we allow rape as an excuse, there are going to be a lot of men being accused of rape in order to justify those abortions. We're going to see rape skyrocket in order to get their abortions. So we do not – we protect life. And the other thing is that Roe v. Wade is not law. The judicial system does not make law. Ultimately, it would be a state's right issue, because it's not in the Constitution anywhere. So it would default through the 10th Amendment to a state's right issue, not a federal issue. So it is about time Texas says, look, I don't even care what the Supreme Court says about Roe v. Wade. We're banning abortion. And if you tell us we can't, we're going to shut all the organizations down that are doing it. We're going to prosecute them. And if you've got a problem, come stop us, because you don't have that authority from the federal government to do that. And so that's the kind of stances we need to start taking as Republicans and as Christians. We need to start standing up for our rights and our morals and stop compromising and stop saying, well, the federal government said no, so I can't do it. Please tell me where they had the right to do it in the first place. They didn't, so I'm not obeying the law. I'm not obeying the ruling.
talking about the thing that you said with Newsom and going after gun rights and everything, I believe, hasn't Remington already been gone after for that and pretty much bankrupt at this point?
I believe so, from my understanding, yeah.
That's what I understand.
If they change that standing law, though, it's going to make it even worse because people are going to be able to sue for everything, like the way they're the same way they're using this to go after abortions, then they're going to be able to do that to go after any organization that's conservative. So it's going to become a legal nightmare if we let this continue on like this.
Bob, I know I've been talking a lot tonight in this 2 hours. You have anything else you want to say as we start to wrap up this last hour?
Yeah, let's go back to one thing with Aaron just a little bit here. I was going to talk about the property tax. I agree with you I may have this wrong, but I understood that our property tax was introduced to fund a war. I don't know which war, but it seemed like way back there, somewhere along, that's where our property tax came in at. I may have the wrong information. I never did follow that up. But nevertheless, what I do agree, and so does Don Huffine, he's for eliminating property tax, and I am for that. I've been for that for the longest, getting rid of a property tax. But I'm thinking that would it be better to try to take it in slices to adjust to it as you go? Like my thing was when I ran for council, I first started running, was I think after 65, you should be tax-free on property because you can't start over and things can happen beyond your control. And if you can't pay your electric or water, you should be able to at least have your house. And you sure don't need the government yanking your fixed income up and down, or a property tax that goes up and down like a yo-yo, but your income doesn't. And that's not right. You're on Social Security or fixed income. So I'm thinking starting there would be an easier place to take a chunk and then get that in place and try to make it 65 tax-free, property tax-free from there on. And then as time goes on, have these candidates running for office to try to beat that, to bring it down more and more till we have it eliminated maybe completely. But if nothing else, at least over 65, you should own your home just a little while before you. And I asked Dan Patrick that. I've talked to him a few times, and I've asked him about that. You know, he said, let's lower the tax. And I said, you know, you can lower the tax, but other people get in office, and things can go right back up again. You know, that doesn't fix it. And I said, let's cut the string. And I know that doesn't, someone else could put the string back, but if we cut the string that area, I think it'd be a little harder for anybody to put it back, I think. And I think that'd be a starting of trying to work it on down. But it wouldn't make more of a logical step to take it step by step down, something like that, to try to get this done? Because I think that's a major
task.
No,
there's no more excuses for this. There's no more excuses for this. I'm in there one term and I go, well, I'm going to top this. And then the next guy comes in and goes, well, we need more money. Nope, we're putting it back on. No, this is what we do. This is how we handle this is how our government works. And that's what I said. Day one, session one, I expect the 8 legislative priorities on there. And I imagine property taxes will be one of them. And I will shut the government down until those things are done. I'm not playing games anymore with Austin. I'm not compromising. People are getting destroyed by property taxes. And it's not just the retired community. The lower class is getting affected, which is why it's crazy why Democrats don't jump on board with this, right? They say they want to help the lower class. Well, that would help them because these people, like I live in Fort Worth, right? I lived in Watauga when I grew up. There's houses I deal in the wind. I deal with homes, right? Because window treatments. There are areas where these people probably bought those houses for $40,000-$50,000. They work an honest job every day. They have for their whole life. They've probably paid off their house now, and they're in their 50s, getting close to 60s, getting close to retirement. And now because of the current influx, they're buying up all these lands around, all these homes in Watauga and all these other smaller communities, and they're forcing up through the appraisal districts all these things. And these people are now being basically taxed out of their homes because of gentrification of the areas. And these people don't deserve to be treated that way. So there is no more excuse for treating people this way. We've got to end it. It has to stop because everybody runs for office for reform. That's what Dan Patrick ran on. Mm-hmm. And what does he do? Well, we capped it. It doesn't matter if you capped the rate when houses are skyrocketing in price. My house has gone up $200,000 in the last 4 years. Great, you capped the rate. It doesn't stop the fact that my house is $200,000 more. So, you know, I went from what should have been a decently modest house in Fort Worth, Texas, So now it's like, are you kidding me? Like, I don't even want to buy a home again in Texas. We want to sell. But I'm like, I can't justify buying a house at this price. I've lived here my whole life. This is ridiculous. And then you have to look at the property taxes that go along with it. And we have to stop.
What about
we have to stop these false steps and just go for it.
What about a consumer's tax to help offset that price of taxes? Because that's what I'm thinking. And to take all that tax out, that's a major amount of shifting cash. You know what I mean? If you stop all the property taxes coming in, what it goes to. And, of course, they're overinflated. I agree 100% too. The schools are overinflated. I like that. Yeah, it's a lot of wasted money. Go ahead.
Well, what is that? This is consumption tax. The bill was actually already proposed in 2013. When Dan Patrick came on board as lieutenant governor, mm-hmm. he refused to ever pick up the bill again. Mm-hmm. he never picked it up. The bill is there. It's all been worked out. All the numbers are there. Mm-hmm. We could rapidly transition in a year, but that's dangerous. It could cause some issues. We can easily transition in two, or we can transition fully and give everybody time to transition between both systems over 3 years. So my plan is to transition over the three-year period. As far as businesses go, the accounting systems, they're already being used all over the world. So it's easy to adapt this and switch it and to this consumption tax system. And it will work, and we can do it in my first term. And that's also why I said I want to move for the constitutional amendment as well, so that by the end of my first term, we are off property taxes, we are still funding the government, and at the same time, we've banned it permanently. So nobody could come in if I was to lose in 4 years and put it back on the people.
Yeah.
Well, Aaron, you said this came up in 2013 and went through a process. So you're saying it's already gone through the process and had a physical note attached to it through the committee chair?
The
when
bill
it was done
was
in 13?
I'm not going to say. Yeah, in 2013, George Lavender proposed the bill in 2013. I believe I'm right on that. I know it was proposed in 2013. I believe it was when Lavender proposed it, but I could be off on that. I haven't looked back at that in a while. But the bill is there. It never got to a vote. It never made it all the way to the floor. They killed it in committee. Either they killed the committee or killed by the lieutenant governor at that time. I can't remember right now. But then, like I said, when Dan came on, he's refused to ever pick it back up.
Okay. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, and they actually have the bill and everything on the website, that Eliminate Property Tax Drop. They have all the bill and all the documentation over there if anybody wants to look at it. So.
Okay.
Well, that's what I was just trying to get at, more or less. Not that I wanted to weaken anything down by just doing one piece at a time. I was just thinking about a major transaction. Anytime you make a major transition like that quickly, I think there can be unforeseen repercussions that need to be adjusted along the way, and that's the only reason I mentioned to maybe taking it in chunks instead of trying to do it at one, because it is a major. But you know, I can see it being done with the consumption tax. I could see that coming and subsidizing, you know, or taking the place of some of that. But it is a major amount of money, and like you said, we need to start taking care of these inflated money for the school and stuff. All that waste, there's a lot of waste going on out there that could be reeled in and that. But anyway, that's what I was just saying, because I'd be happy if I got – right now I don't have anything, okay? I'm still tied to the government till the end, so I don't have anything. So I'll be happy if I got the 65 to be free, you know? That's an improvement. So that's what I'm looking for. I'll be happy with any kind of improvement.
That's my point of getting it done. Well, that's my point about trying to get it done right off the bat, is that then I have time to do the transition during my term. So I want to do that so then we can take the 2 to 3 years to transition to make sure we don't do anything crazy, that we don't screw the government, or really and truly we don't screw the people. That's the bigger issue, right? I don't want to mess up.
We
end up not doing something we should have done. So
I got news for you, Aaron. The way this thing's run right now, you can't screw up the government. It's already at the bottom.
Well, it's already.
So don't worry about it. You can't do anything wrong. Believe me. That's the beauty of this. If you was to get in, it can't get no worse, okay? So.
Well, I agreed on that. That's what I was meaning. I was meaning more like I don't want to screw the people by screwing up somewhere I screw the people over trying to do it too fast. So, yes, we want to make sure that
the bar is so low, you don't have to do much to stay above it, okay? It's really down there, okay? So
I'm in agreement.
Yeah. Okay. But, well, that's all I had to say tonight, James, there, and that. And if we're coming to the end here, Aaron. Do you have any other topics or anything that you didn't feel like you get to say or you want to bring out or anything?
Do you have any events coming up where people could meet you and get to know you a little bit better in person or anything?
The only event I'm going to have in town at this point is 26th in Decatur. There's an event, and I'll have it posted on my social media and my website. It's actually a clay shooting, clay pigeon tournament, and then with Chad Prather, and then there's going to be a rally afterwards. So that will be in town, that, like I said, for Decatur. Everything else right now is going to be out of the area. So that would be the closest one. But you can check me on all my social media. I try to post a lot of my speeches and stuff so people can actually see how I, you know, interact and how I talk and, you know, not just words. So, outside of that, I guess my finish and my closing would be, I mean, obviously I made some pretty, you know, some of the way y'all ask questions, I got a lot of my platform and the way I think about things out. But my biggest thing is that we've got to, we're at a point in this country where I'm, as a white, successful Christian male, I'm the number one terrorist target. And right now I've been listening to the Canadian truckers talk on a lot of these things, and the Canadians and a lot of the people around the world are looking to Florida and saying, I wish we had a Florida. As a fifth-generation Texan, that pisses me off. Nobody should ever be looking anywhere except the state of Texas for the idea of freedom, because that's what we have always supposedly stood for. And we have had 20 years of the same establishment Republican system running things, and now Florida is what people are looking to as freedom? That is a disgrace to a Texan. We need leadership back in Texas that's willing to stand up against the federal government, refuse to shut your businesses down, refuse to let TABC come in and tell you what to do with your bar and your liquor license. Stop letting licensors control this so that we can have little, you know, basically little brown shirts running around in our state telling people what they can and can't do. We are grown adults. The government was not designed to control us. It was designed to give us freedom and liberties, and we need a government that goes back to doing that. And that is my job as lieutenant governor. My job is to go up there and get the government off of your life. It's to not go up there and write you a bunch of bills. It's to go up there and to remove the restrictions that have been placed upon us and take where our freedoms and our liberties have been taken from us. Because if we don't, as the state of Texas, make massive change in this primary that is currently going on and ends on March 1st, if we don't vote all these guys out and change our system, with the amount of stuff going on in Canada right now where the police are basically trying to take down a peaceful protest, you've already got D.C. walling up getting ready for the American truck convoy. Why are you walling up? What are you afraid of? Well, what they're afraid of is that we, the people, are finally saying enough is enough, and we're coming for you. And so that's the same reason I'm running. I'm tired of my life being messed with, and it's about time we stand up, start standing up for our values and our morals, and say enough is enough. It's time to replace everybody that had their chance. If they tell you they're going to do it, too bad. They've already gotten their chance, and they didn't stop it when they had that chance. So vote them all out. And let's stand up for ourselves, because I don't think we have much time left in this country and in this world if Texas doesn't fight. And everybody's looking at Texas to stand up. And if we become the beacon of freedom that we always claim we are, then the other states will join in on us. And we can not only change Texas, we can change the United States, and effectively we can then change the world. And that is the power Texas has, and it's about time our leadership acts like that. So that is why I'm doing it. We didn't talk about this earlier. So my website is s4tx.com, and my all my social media is under @Sorrell. So my full name, Sorrells, 4 Texas. And you can find me on pretty much every platform. I'm more active on certain ones, but, that's kind of my final message. And I think that's where everybody needs to start focusing. And we need to really engage in the primaries, and we need to start standing up as a people, because the biggest threat to our country is not Joe Biden or anybody else. The biggest threat is American apathy and voting, from the municipal level all the way up to the state, all the way to the federal level. We have to engage as a population, or else this is our fault. God told us we get the government we deserve. If we don't engage, then this is the government we deserve. So don't complain about anybody but yourself if you don't go and get involved.
Aaron, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast tonight, answering our questions, and really trying to get your views out there to people. I hope that after a week from Tuesday, if you are able to secure the primary, that you will come on and talk to us again. And even if you don't, I'd like to have you come on and just talk to us and give us your general views about how everything turned out.
Gladly. I said you can't be of the people if you're not willing to communicate with the people. So I have no problem coming back on. So
thank you, Aaron, very
Bob,
much.
Bob, who do we have
next
week?
Next week we have Taylor running for District 95. Taylor Mondek running for Congress, District 95 next week. And thank you very much, Aaron, for your time. And James, I appreciate you hosting the show. And good
you're
night
welcome.
For me.
Yeah. Thank you. God bless. And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Good night.